Happy New Year.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Kathy Covert, and as Clerk of the Legislature, I'd like to call the January 6, 2015 organizational meeting to order, please. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag?
For which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all. I'd like to take roll call. Mr. Sigler. Mr. Stein.
Here.
Mr. Burbank.
Here.
Ms. Chalk.
I am here.
Mr. Dennis.
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
13 members present. First order of business this evening is the election of a temporary chair. I'd like to open the floor for nominations. Mr. Stein.
I would like to nominate my colleague to my right, Julie Kiefer, who is, I understand, the longest serving member of this legislature still here.
Is there a second? Ms. Chalk. Who raised their hand?
Dave
McKenna.
Hand
Mr. McKenna. Are there any other nominations? May I have a motion to close nominations, please? Mr. Dennis, seconded by...
I move to close the nominations.
Seconded by Mrs. McBean Claiborne. All those in favor of closing nominations?
Aye.
Any opposed? Carried. All those in favor of nominating Ms. Kiefer as temporary chair? Please signify with aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ms. Kiefer?
Well, good evening. It's nice to know that longevity has something to say for it. I would open the floor for nominations for chair of the legislature for 2015. Dan Klein.
Thank you. Mike Lane has been chair of the legislature for this past year, and in my opinion, he's done an excellent job of steering the ship with a steady hand, which is not the easiest thing with this group of independent-minded people. Mike brings a lot to this position in this, his fifth term as county legislator. He brings a great deal of institutional memory, which is particularly important and appreciated by me. He brings his background in even more local politics as former mayor of Dryden. He brings his training as an attorney. And Mike is a very patient, thorough, supportive person, both with his colleagues here in the legislature and also with the public. And so for these reasons, I would like to nominate Mike to be chair of the legislature again in 2015.
Thank you. Is there a second for Mike's nomination? Leslin?
Sure. I say that not because I'm hesitant about seconding Mike's nomination, because almost every year I have the opportunity of being one of the nominated names as well, so it just feels different. This year, however, I am pleased to support and second Mike's nomination for chair. Dan has essentially said everything I would have said, so I'll have to make some things up. like I'm not sure what baseball team he supports, because that might determine whether I continue with the second in nomination or not.
Which one do you like?
Anyhow, one of the things I appreciate about Mike, aside from all of the things that Dan said, is the fact that he has been very consistent in terms of his outreach and willingness and ability to try to connect with each of us. I know over my years of being here, and I've served with Mike for quite a while in this body, coming on board, he was here, one of the people who helped to mentor me and help me to understand the ins and outs of politics as a newbie. I still don't understand it because I don't know how to play that game very well. But do appreciate Mike taking me under his wing along with others to help me to understand how it works here in county government. I also do personally appreciate the fact that I can guarantee that if I get one holiday card during the holidays, it will come from Mike. If no one else sends me one, it will come from Mike. And also someone who really has a knack for constituent service. I admire that about you, Mike, and understanding really how to listen to the people who you represent as constituents in your district and even beyond throughout the county, and to bring those needs and issues to the table, whether or not they are on the winning side or whether or not they're controversial, you certainly do bring them. I appreciate that about you, appreciate your honesty, and definitely appreciated your leadership, you stepping up and taking on the leadership of this legislature last year. So for those reasons, in addition to what Dan has said, I am pleased to second your nomination for chair of this body for 2015.
Thank you, Leslie. And I saw a couple of hands up also. I want to give Martha a chance to say something if she wanted to about Mike.
I just appreciate Mike's leadership this year. I think there have been some difficult times and some, some times when we needed everybody to step back and listen to people and think carefully. And Mike certainly helps us to do that. So look forward to working with Mike again this year if he's elected.
And I saw Peter's hand, I think. Peter, did you wish to say something?
Yeah, I think that Mike's calmness, that his dedication to following the rules, and his understanding that the chair of this body is not the same thing as the mayor. The chair of this body is, as they say about the Pope, one amongst equals. And I think that Mike follows that rule. And the last thing I would like to say, which is probably the most important, is that he always gives me a ride home.
I would happily have seconded Mike's nomination also. I think it's great that the newest member of the legislature moved your nomination, and I would be happy to see the longest-serving one second it. I appreciate especially that Mike puts a good face on the county. He represents us well in public. Are there any other nominations for chair? Would someone care to close the nominations? Move them? Will? Is there a second to close the nominations? Peter, thank you. Please vote if you're in favor of closing the nominations by raising your hand.
Aye.
That's unanimous. Thank you. So we will now vote on Mike's possible being chair again. All in favor of Mike as chair for 2015, please raise a hand.
Aye.
That's also unanimous. Thank you all very much. It's yours, Mike.
Thank you, everyone. That's very humbling. Thank you for those kind words, Dan. thank you for those kind words, Leslin and Martha and Peter. And I'll try to do the work of this legislature with you, as was said, as one among equals this coming year, and try to do my best. And if I go astray, you'll let me know that. Hopefully, if you go astray, I'll let you know that. All of our jobs to act jointly as a team and to see what we can do. I don't have a long speech tonight. I will have remarks at the next meeting when we do appointments of committees and chairs. The next order of business tonight would be the nomination of a vice chair. And I open the floor up for nominations. Nathan Shinagawa.
Yes, I would like to nominate Jim Dennis to be vice chair of the county legislature. I have known Jim for as long as we've both been on the legislature, which is about 9 years, which is remarkable because I've not done anything else with my life for more than, anything more than 9 years. So, and that 9 years has been, I think, really has been a great experience, especially because I've had a friend in the legislature and a mentor in the legislature that has really guided me over these 9 years. Jim Dennis, not only as a county legislator for the past 9 years, but also, has had other experience in government as a city council person in the city of Ithaca, and he also was a school teacher for all of his life, being a school teacher for primarily third graders, right? And which is probably why he got along with me so well. And over these 9 years, I've seen Jim really take his experience and his passion for the job and actually be able to bring some serious results for the county. He has been there for us in almost every major labor negotiation. Jim has been there for us as the chair of the budget committee for several years now, and where we have had probably some of the most disciplined budgets, thorough budgets, where we really have found a way to find that happy place between being able to have the lowest taxes possible, but at the same time provide quality services to our constituents. And so I think that Jim has really, through his own actions, demonstrated how valuable he is to this legislature, not only as a member, but as a vice chair. And that's why I so enthusiastically support him and nominate him tonight.
Thank you, Nathan. Is there a second? Dave McKenna.
Yeah, I'd like to second nomination for Mr. Dennis. I've only known him for about 5 years, but he's come to be a friend, and we've served on several committees together, and basically I like the way he does business and all the things that Nate said. So, Jim, there you go.
I'd like to add that I've had the pleasure of serving with Jim as vice in his capacity as vice chair this year. He's done remarkably. He's been available. He's consulted and taken on important tasks, and I'm happy to support him for a second term. Anyone else? Someone want to move to close? Are there any other nominations for vice chair? Would someone want to move to close the nominations? Dave McKenna, seconded by Dooley Kiefer. All in favor of closing the nominations for vice chair, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I think that's unanimous. On the election of James Dennis as vice chair for 2015, all those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
And those opposed? Again, is unanimous. Congratulations, Jim.
Let me just say a couple of words. The vice chair of the legislature, we have meetings, Mike and myself and the county administrator, and we end up talking about many, many things that the legislature does. But Mike has been an amazing chair. He hasn't missed the meeting, so I have not ever actually chaired a county ledge meeting. And I feel like Governor David Patterson, when he was the lieutenant governor, used to call the governor and say, how you doing, how you feeling? And if the governor answered the phone, David Patterson would go back to sleep. So, it's that sort of a job. I really don't want to chair the legislature meetings because it takes a special skill, and Mike does it so well. I'm very happy to be what I am and chair the committees that I have, and I appreciate very much the words that Nate and David said to get me in this lofty position. So thank you. And the support of all my colleagues. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Jim. You ready to proceed with the meeting? Before we do that, I just want to add a special thanks to Kathy Covert for opening the meeting as our clerk of our legislature, and of course Michelle Pothorf, the chief deputy clerk, who's here at every meeting, and also Karen Fuller, who's not here tonight, but is the other deputy clerk that rounds out the group that does so much to serve all 14 legislators here and coordinate all the silly things we do from time to time. I would point out, Jim.
Mike, let me just mention one thing. Julie Kiefer opened the meeting and chaired the meeting, and I would like the minutes to reflect that we did not change a word that she said, and she did a wonderful job running the meeting. Thank you, Julie.
Moving right along. I would just point out that if we have emergency exits to the back of the room, to my right, in the front of the room to my left. And if there should be a fire, please don't use the elevator. We have a presentation of proclamations. We have one proclamation tonight. I won't read the whole thing, but it has to do with the 90th anniversary of the New York State Association of Counties. And we want to have that recognized. I'll read the resolve. Now, therefore, I, Michael Lane, chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, hereby recognize the 90th anniversary of the New York State Association of Counties, and on behalf of the Tompkins County Legislature, extend our admiration, respect, and profound gratitude for the extraordinary achievements and important service to the Tompkins County Legislature and its residents. And we've signed that today. I'm not aware that we need an executive session tonight, Jonathan. Paula, anything? Okay. Next, we're going to move to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity for the public to speak to us for up to 3 minutes on any topic. And we do have a clock to keep track of time that will start when someone speaks. And at the end of the time, there'll be an audible ringing noise. And we ask that if you're still speaking at that point, that you please conclude. Anyone who wants to speak needs to sign one of these blue cards, which are on the table in the back, and hand it up. It's not too late. We have rules with respect to privilege of the floor, which I will read. When you sign the blue card, you're agreeing to the three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. And you agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. First card I have tonight is from Jamie Breedlove. If you could please come forward to one of the microphones and tell us from what municipality you are.
Does my 3 minutes start after I tell you that? Just kidding.
Why, sure.
Mike, you're my legislator, and so I live outside, just right outside of Dryden there, and so I thank you. Glad you're our chair.
Thank you.
Most of the people that are in this room know me already. If those sitting around the table have worked with me, a lot of you have, and so it's always great to see all of you. Tonight I'm standing, I've asked my family to come forward with me. I'm also representing the team of our Public Action Committee for CSEA. I am their leader, and we are going to begin, for the first time ever, I understand, having a Public Action Committee. We have with us tonight some of our leaders from a couple of different units and also some members of our Public Action Committee. This is my spouse, Diana. Come on up, guys. Come on out. Diana works for one of the local not-for-profit agencies, and this is Emily. She is our daughter, and she just recently graduated from Fredonia State with a Bachelor of Fine Arts. And the reason I'm asking them to come here tonight is because I've worked for the WIC program at the Health Department for almost 14 years, and I wanted you to put a face to why my job means so much to me. In the last almost 14 years, I have been, for the first time in my life, I just have been able to have a living wage and have benefits that mattered in my life. They have mattered to me in really significant ways. I'm here tonight to say thank you. Thank you because I have a job that helps support my family. When Emily was in the sixth grade, she had an emergency appendectomy where we thought that we were going to lose her. And if I hadn't had health insurance that covered us, I might have waited longer than I should have. And I also didn't have to pay a penny out of pocket because I had that benefit that took care of it. This year we bought the dental insurance, and Diana had to have a crown and had to have a root canal, and it only cost us $700. So I came to work for WIC in 2001. Around that time, we had approximately 120 employees. Then it began to bottom out. The raises became the norm, but at least our benefits stayed steady. Attrition has made our county workforce smaller, and the challenge to work smarter, not harder, has become the norm. Today at the Health Department, we have 68 employees. Now we're negotiating contracts again, and tonight I'm thanking you in advance for remembering that the workers are what make this county awesome. Every day they go to work to jobs that are stressful because of the workload and participants, but also because of the workers that will never be replaced. So taxes on our home in this county have outpaced our raises, and health insurance costs continue to decrease. Yet we're union employees that make a difference, and we're grateful for the jobs and opportunities that we have. Thank you in advance for honoring your employees with contracts that not only give them the raises they need, but the benefits and the result and the respect that they deserve. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Next, I have Tom Shawnee.
Hi, my name is Tom Sini. My wife
Sorry
and I.
Sorry for the mispronunciation.
That's okay. My wife and I run the DeWitt Park Inn down the street here, and we also maintain a house out in Danby. And as you may know, Danby had a problem over the weekend, over the past several days, past this, in advance of this weekend. And even though the situation has been resolved, all is not well in Danby. We had a little meeting on our street from the people that live there, and none of us feel quite the same, quite as safe, quite as like we're living in a nice, quiet country atmosphere as we did before. If you read the newspaper article, there are, you know, the basic facts laid out there, but all the facts don't quite make sense. There's some questions that, you know, maybe there are answers to that I'm just not aware of yet, but we would like some way of getting those answers. I put a call into the sheriff's department. That hasn't resulted in a return call. So here are some of the things that we're concerned about. The arresting officer, why wasn't he, well, more professional? Apparently he was belligerent and foul-mouthed when he came to the door. Mrs. Cady and Mr. Cady were inside at the time. Somehow Mrs. Cady got separated from her husband outside of the house, and she had, as I understand it, persuaded him to come out if she could hold his hand on the way to the police car. However, this was denied, and that kind of shut down that whole possibility of him surrendering. Why were there so many police agencies, law enforcement agencies involved in this situation? From just what I can recall, Elmira was there, Binghamton, Ithaca, of course, Cayuga Heights, I think, the New York State Police, of course, the Pennsylvania State Police, Ithaca College, Cornell. There was apparently over 150 personnel over the span of the entire operation, and at least 40 on site at all times. If you have an opportunity to drive by the house, because I think that's what made me feel like this has just gone over the edge. And it makes you wonder what the operation of a standoff really entails, enables the police officers to do, because the house is destroyed. And I didn't know that they could do that. Apparently, whether you are the owner of the house or not, if you're occupying the house and you're not coming out and you have fired a shot, then your house can be destroyed. And, you know, that's something that I think is a little extreme.
The time has run out.
Okay.
The sound wasn't very loud, but if you could conclude, you can finish your thought.
So what I'm simply asking for is an awareness that there has been exposed a problem here that I think needs to be further addressed.
Thank you, Tom. I have Camille Doucette.
Hello, Camille Doucette from Danby, just around the bend from Hornbrook. I was out of town while all these events were happening, and I must say, as Tom was saying, just seeing the house is traumatic. It's an escalation of power, of abuse of power. And from where I was trying to figure out, by checking on the Google, what was happening in my neighborhood. And I read things like man in a structure with a woman and two children. The language was dehumanizing. To me, it's like military language. There was bullying tactics. I mean, we talk about 100 can of tear gas. If this is a person with a felony, who was pushed to the edge over 4 days, and he was mentally unstable, well, we pushed him to suicide. This is... anyway, I feel overwhelmed by the size of the power that was used for such a person, especially that we hear right now of abuse of police power. So, as some were saying, me too, I feel overwhelmed that this doesn't feel safe. And I request that there be an investigation in all of this, all these events that led to this fiasco, this dreadful outcome. And maybe there could be some police training. I mean, we train people in nonviolence every day. To treat people as they are citizen, full citizen, even though they might have a problem of drug abuse or alcohol abuse or mental problems. Policemen have to be trained in all these aspects of how citizens function. And thank you.
Thank you very much. And Bob Nape.
Sunday, I took a ride up to Hornbrook Avenue or Hornbrook Road just because I was curious. I really didn't even know why I was going there. And as I got close to the house, I slowed down, and there was a handful of people there clearing it out, you know, And I didn't really know who they were, but this woman who turns out to be Melissa, turned out to be the widow, waved me in. I was still out on the road. She, like, waved me in. She said, come on in, come on. And I hesitated, and she came from the property out to the road and right up to my car window, and she said, come on in. She said, I want people to see this. She said, you have a camera? Bring, you know, I want people to see this. I want people to know what they did to my house, what they did. And so I pulled over and got talking to her and her mother and her father. And I'm a contractor, so I had tools in my car. I kind of expected, hey, maybe there's a work crew. Maybe somebody's trying to put this house back together today. I know there's a family. So maybe we're going to pack, you know, maybe they're working. And then when I saw it, I was just like, oh, there's no putting this house back together. This house is done. It's just ready for the wrecking ball. It's done. I mean, there was more things broken than there were still standing. And so I talked, and then I walked around, and I looked at the damage, and I took a video and spoke with her. And she was, you know, remarkably calm. I mean, she was getting all of her things that she could, any furniture that was salvageable. You know, she doesn't own the house, she rents. But, you know, getting the things out, some computers. And but as Camille just said, you're struck by the extent of the damage when you see it. I mean, the newspaper made it sound like they punched a few holes in the walls to, you know, inject some canisters or something like that. They totally destroyed this house. So there's a lot of questions when something like this happens. And I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying, you know, I'm curious. What was the chain of command? I mean, who ordered this? You know, when you have state police, New York State Police, all these locals, who becomes in charge? Who gives the orders to demolish a house? And what is the protocol? Again, I don't know, but I think this is of such gargantuan proportions that it requires a review, an inquiry, an investigation. Like, if this happens again next week somewhere with a person who is, you know, has some mental issues, is this result? Are we okay? Are we going to be okay with this result again? I mean, so I think this situation requires a closer scrutiny. And I'm not trying to pass judgment on anybody, but I do know that what happened, there has to be a better way. And when somebody has a DUI, or DWI, whatever you say, that the person doesn't wind up dead, a mother of two, widowed, you know, children orphaned, and a house destroyed. Like, this can't be the way that the response to a DUI is going to be accepted by, you know, especially, you know, like, whatever, by civilized society. This is just not acceptable. I hope that somehow or other out of this comes a review of the whole process, top to down, you know, top to bottom, and what actually happened.
Thank you. Nancy Metzger.
Hi. I'm here to talk about the Hornbrook Road situation myself. I also stopped at the house on Sunday. I would think I was there a little bit after Bob. And Melissa Cady, the widow, and she'd lived there for 15 years. And everything in the house was destroyed because of 100 canisters of tear gas that had been lobbed into the house, leaving a noxious, poisonous powder. Everything she owned is destroyed. So I agree with them. I think there should be an investigation. I'm very sad that a house built in 1837 came to this, it was one of the oldest houses in Danby, came to this sort of end. But I really speak for Melissa, too, because I think as a community, we all have to step forward and help this woman. She is left with nothing. You know, the night before she had a family and a home and a job, and now she has nothing. And I know the Danby Federated Church is starting a fund for her. There is a dinner Friday night. But just encourage yourself and people you know to donate money to her, because she has to start over, and she has two kids that now they have no father. And I would really also like to say that this could have happened to my house. I live a mile up the road. If David Cady had decided to run and got into my house or your house, Do the police have the right to do this to our homes? To destroy our homes? Seriously, this is a question we need to answer ourselves. And I hope that this somehow starts a dialogue. I know that you guys aren't really responsible for the sheriff necessarily, but you're our elected officials, and I kind of know you because of being here before and felt comfortable that I could come here and just open your eyes and try to help us figure out a way to keep this from happening yet again. I think that's about all I have to say. Yeah, and I don't know where we're going to go from here, but we have to find a better way. All right, thanks.
Thank you. I have two more cards. If anyone else wants to speak after that, please sign a blue card and hand it up. Pete Myers.
Hi, everybody. My name is Pete Myers. I'm the director of the Tompkins County Worker Center, and I live in the city of Ithaca. I'm here to speak briefly on the issue of the measure on the floor tonight about the living wage contingency money going to $20,000 going to the Solid Waste Recycling Center with the Costello workers. And I want to thank specific people, Carol Chalk and Nate Shinagawa, for having introduced this resolution last year for the contingency fund. Also, my brother from Indiana, who appears not to be here, Joe Mariana. I don't know if people know that he's from Indiana, as I am. Also, Barb Ekstrom for playing such a strong role in making this possible about the living wage for the recycling workers, as well as our county attorney, Jonathan Wood, and for all of you for supporting this as we go forward. I'm going to use the last 2 minutes of my time, actually, to let you hear Milton Webb speak about this issue. It's just great to hear his words.
Well, I'm happy that Casella agreed to pay their living wage because the guys that are working here, they do a lot of good work. We work hard, and we need that living wage. A lot of people need the living wage to live. And for all of us that's at $10 is going to be jumping up over $12, it's about the time, and we appreciate Casella looking at it. I appreciate the legislator going through all of the stuff that they went through, hanging in there with us. I appreciate you, Pete, and the Worker Center for being there by our side, guiding us and helping us get everything down and getting everything right. And this living wage is going to come at a real good time. It's not going to come on the 1st of January, but it's going to come on the 1st of February. So a lot of people that are hurting right now will be able to make a living for their family, might be able to have good substance for their children, be able to get things that they normally couldn't get. The living wage is a perfect thing for people that don't have the ways and means of living. To make their ends meet, to pay their bills, to go out and take their children and buy them clothes, buy them stuff. This is a good thing.
Do you have any idea how many people this... Yeah, any idea how many people this will affect at Casella here in Tompkins County?
Oh, this here in Tompkins County is going to affect a lot of people here at this plant. Everybody. Everyone that works here is going to affect everybody that works here. And everybody that works here is excited about it. So we have a living wage coming in. We have a way for them to make headline, better way for their family, better ways for things to happen, money that they can save, that they can put in the bank. For what they're doing now, there is no saving. So therefore, we'll be able to do something to make things better for families. These people and all of these things and all these places that don't make a living wage, just hang in there because it's coming.
Thanks, everybody. Milton Webb, he apologizes for not being able to be here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete, and thank you for Mr. Webb's comments as well. Joanne Cipolla-Dennis.
Oh, good evening. I hail from Dryden. I wish it was a happier 2015. Maybe we can improve on that starting right immediately. I thank you for respecting the public's need to come here tonight and to talk about the encounters over the weekend that led to the death of Mr. Cady. Usually, it has been a new rule not to be able to discuss police or any other public employee that we employ. So thank you for finally respecting the public's right to speak freely about what we shouldn't be silent about, and that is police accountability across the board. I really thank the members of the public for coming here tonight and speaking about the death of this young man, which was needless. Didn't have to happen that way. What would have happened if the police had just left and done this another day? Maybe when he was more mentally stable, when he was in a different frame of mind, when his chemistry was somewhere where he could accept maybe going back to jail to pay for a crime that maybe he did. We don't know that he did any of those things. To serve a warrant with over 100 people over a three-day period is absurd. I have been in corrections. Many of my family are police officers. They are distraught, disgusted, outraged at the behavior of the police in Tompkins County. Not one entity, all of them. I asked you, and many of us asked you last January to put cameras on our police. You didn't do anything about that. You didn't want us to talk about how the police are acting. You didn't want to hear our encounters. Black people that came here were told that they were troublemakers and here to start a fight. And that's why you don't see them here. This man didn't have to die. He could have and should have been helped. This entire community and you elected officials let him down. His children will always be afraid of the police, just like Sean Greenwood's children are afraid of the police, just like Mr. Shumway's children are afraid of the police, just like I am afraid of the police. We have no accountability for police in this county. Maybe when it is one of yours that is gunned down, harassed, arrested, thrown to the ground, chased, then maybe you will do something. From this moment on, I want public privilege of the floor respected as it has been tonight, and I do not want to be intimidated and threatened by arrest of one of those officers because of what I say. I hope that you, all of you, are going to take action. Because you know what? We have a sheriff who doesn't even come to these meetings anymore because he doesn't want to talk to the public, because he doesn't like the accountability, because he readily admits on tape that he has officers serving who have written complaints against him and have been sued for misconduct, but he keeps them because they're friends of his and his child's. We can do far better.
The time has expired. Could you please conclude?
I will. Thank you. We can do far better. We're going to do far better. And if you don't want people taking to the streets and not leaving, you better do it right now. Thank you.
Thank you. We have privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I don't think I see any. So we'll proceed to privilege of the floor for legislators. Before that, I wanted to mention two other people that are here every meeting for us and probably ought to have a little recognition. One is our public information officer, who is Marsha Lynch, who spends the time, even after we get done a long meeting, putting together what we did so that there can be a press release about the meeting put out. And the other person is up in the control room, Jim Blizzard, who single-handedly, he's waving at us, single-handedly controls the production of the meetings that we have. And we thank both of them for doing that. Who would like to speak on privilege of the floor? Dan Klein.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. All I want to say is that it was mentioned a little bit, but that there's been a couple of funds set up for the survivors of this incident in Danby, for Melissa Cady, the widow, and her children. One way that they can be supported is by contributing money via the Danby Federated Church, 1859 Danby Road. They're in the phone book as well. They're online. You can find them that way. And then the other, apparently, it was a GoFundMe.com site, which I was not able to find when I went to look for it. And I take that back. When I searched the site for Melissa Cady, Danby, things like that, I couldn't find it. So it's not easy to find. Where you have to go is GoFundMe.com/JLAQU0. I don't know any way to remember that. So I just wanted to say that those are two ways you can support the family if you're interested. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Anyone else like to speak on privilege of the floor? Martha Robertson.
All right. You said 1859 Danby Road. Is that mailbox Ithaca, 14850?
Correct.
And you said GoFundMe.com/JLAQU0?
Correct.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on the passing of Governor Mario Cuomo. There have been many, many things said about him and his long public service in the last few days since his passing. And, you know, I remember the 1984 speech that has been played many, many times. And it's a message that is vitally important for us to remember again. I wish we had as eloquent a spokesperson for the cause, for the fight against income inequality and for remembering the people who are not quite making it in this country, in this world. I wish we had that voice again. I think that's a huge gap. There are many people in this community who served in the Cuomo administration and worked with him in many ways, and I'm sure they're remembering those efforts, those years working together for New Yorkers as well. So it's an important passage, and I'm glad it's a moment to think about some of the issues that he fought so hard for.
Hear, hear, Martha. Anyone else like to speak? Jim Dennis, then Carol Chalk.
Thank you, Michael. Martha, I too want to speak about Andrew Cuomo.
Mario?
And Mario Cuomo, oh. Or as they call him in New York, Mario Cuomo. And I was fortunate enough back in 1983 or 84 to go to the Egg when the governor was first sworn in as governor of New York State. And as a young city council person, to hear someone like him, and it was incredibly impressive. He spoke about things that many of us wanted to do and hoped that we would be able to do as elected people, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. And I think Cuomo himself, he called himself a pragmatic progressive. And those of you who try to put labels on things, which we all do, you know, think about that one for a while. He wanted to get the job done, and his complete goal as a public official was to help those who needed help. He was not a country clubber. He was not a huge house. He lived in Queens. He stayed in Queens until he moved to Sutton Place, where he lived with his wife, Matilda. I happened to watch the ceremony from the Catholic Church in Park Avenue today. And you watch public officials, well-known public officials, there's always a big line of other important people who show up and make speeches about you when you die. That didn't happen today. He had a Jesuit priest who was the normal priest, the pastor in that church, and he did the homily, and which was about Cuomo because he knew him, because he was a regular at the church with his wife and some of his children as they move around the city of New York. He talked wonderfully about Cuomo's life, his commitment to Catholicism, his commitment to his family, and also his government time. And it was well done for a Jesuit, which they're always well-spoken and wonderful people. But it strayed away from saying all those great things that other politicians say about each other when one of them dies. And it was just about Cuomo as a man. And then actually the whole ceremony ended up with his son Andrew making about a 10 or 15 minute speech about him, but he talked about Pop, not the governor. And for those of us who say things about Andrew Cuomo and think about all the negative things he does for county governments and sometimes positive, it was a real departure from what he usually does. And frankly, I thought it was the best speech I've heard him make in his time as governor, because he was talking about his father. So it was pretty incredible to watch. I think Cuomo was a one-of-a-kind person for New York State, and he was loyal. So thank you for listening.
Carol Chuck.
Yeah, about Mario, I will just say that A Tale of Two Cities is one of the great speeches of all time, that one of the early things that I was conscious of making me think. But that's not the Cuomo that I want to talk about today. It feels like old news almost, but how about that New York State for banning hydrofracking, right? I mean, I want to give a shout-out, and take note, this may be the rare time you'll hear me say this. I really want to give a shout-out to Andrew Cuomo. It took guts. It was politically difficult, but I want to recognize the stance that he took of saying earlier on that he was going to look at the science and the health. And then when that science and health came in, he stuck to that. And, and it was incontrovertible. I think it's going to change how the country, New York State was not the first state to say we're not going to do hydrofracking. Vermont was. We're the first ones with shale and gas potential under our state to do so. And I think there's 35 states around the country that are currently looking at this or are engaged in it. And it's this, and around the world, countries that this will open up doors. And I want to recognize 50,000 people around the state who have spent the last, 5 or 6 years growing numbers, coming out day after day, hour after hour, from early in the morning to late at night to make this happen. And I want to recognize our legislature. Thinking about, this legislature early on took a stance. I think that we have passed 8 or 9 resolutions related to this subject. The first 6 of them were unanimous, bipartisan, unanimous, across the board. I want to recognize Ed Marks, who's sitting back there. And by the way, there are staff here who are here for items later on, so we might want to consider taking them first, for giving us real substance. I'll remember that. What was it, like an 11-page single-spaced resolution that we ended up with on the first one, detailing exactly why and the questions that we had about hydrofracking. I think some of the later resolutions, although they weren't unanimous, a lot of the reason was people said, haven't we done this already? We've really stuck in there. So thank you. Thank you, New York State. Thank you, Governor Cuomo. And thank you to all those people.
Carol, thank you. Peter Stein.
I was debating whether I should say this, but I think I will. I have a couple of personal experiences I had with Mario Cuomo, which I find interesting in retrospect, and I think I'll tell you about them. The first one took place a long time ago, and I can't even figure out how long it was, nor can I figure out the particular organization I'm referring to. But there was a group around New York State they were called the New Democratic Coalition or something like that. I think it was NDC. And I don't exactly remember what it was, but it was a grassroots group who were trying to take over the politics of New York. And there was a local group in Ithaca, and I was a member of that group. And this organization called the NDC had a meeting in New York City where there were candidates who were running for office that came to a particular public school and the members of the NDC would go around and talk to those people. So I went down with one other person, and we went to that school. And there were a lot of Democrats whose names I knew that were there with sort of large displays and lots of food. And you had to stand in a line to speak to them because they were well-known people. And I sort of listened to what they were saying. I didn't get my chance, but I went around to another one and another one. And then I came to the end, and there was a candidate that I'd never heard of. It was a funny name, and Mario Cuomo was the name. And he was not one of the famous ones, but he had a little table also that had sort of nice submarine sandwiches. So I went over and said hello to him. And he said to me, well, was I interested in talking to him, to hear about him? How was I going to vote? And I said, well, honestly, I've never heard of you before. Who I was planning to vote for was somebody else whose name I gave him. So he asked me to sit down. And I sat down and munched on this submarine sandwich and had a conversation the likes of which I have never had with any politician that I've known, with the possible exception of one person. One person is Hillary Clinton. And my experience in talking to important politicians is they have a way of talking, they have things they're going to say, you say it, you say something else, and they don't listen, they don't answer, they just figure out what other thing to say to respond to what you've said. And that just happens all the time. I've heard it a million times in my life. But with this guy, it was different. He wanted to know what I thought. And we had a real conversation where he told me what he thought that I was saying that was right and what he thought that I was saying was on the track. And at the end of it, I said, you impress me. I'm going to vote for you. And he said, thanks. Well, he didn't win, okay. I can't remember the names of the politicians who won. But that was a rather remarkable experience I had with dealing with somebody who at that point was not important, but was going to become important. And I think he did that for his whole career. Once you get to be governor of New York State, you can't really have a lot of opportunity to talk to just ordinary people. But when Mario Cuomo talked to people, that's the way he talked during his whole career. So that was one story. And the other story took place maybe 15 years later. And I was also in New York City. It was the winter time, around now. And I was at another meeting with the State Democratic Committee. It was cold. It was bitter cold in New York. And we didn't have a key to get into the room that we were supposed to go into to have our meeting. But we got into the main door of this building that was closed, this office building, and we were all huddled around there talking where somebody was trying to get the key so we could go up to the room we were going to. And Mario Cuomo was governor at this time, and one of his aides were there, and we were talking about, was he going to go to New Hampshire or wasn't he going to go to New Hampshire? And the aide said, yeah, we're going to New Hampshire. And when I said, they said, plane's on the tarmac now, and they'll be taking off soon. We're going to New Hampshire, and he's going to be in the New Hampshire primary, and we're going to win the election, the primary and then the election. And we hung around for a while, and then finally someone found a key, came there with a key, and we went up to the room. And I said to this person, hey, isn't that great? We're going to do it. He's going to New Hampshire. The guy said he changed his mind. Plane's on the tarmac. He's not going to New Hampshire. And it was one of the greatest disappointments of my life. So those are my two stories. They're both true, I swear.
Leslie being Claiborne.
I don't have anything nearly as interesting as Peter's. I do want to thank the residents of Danby who came out to speak with us tonight and to share their perspective and their views and their and what they saw when they visited their house in Hornbrook. We talk about things that happen in other communities. We talk about Ferguson on this floor. We talk about New York City. And certainly, I do want to express that, like they feel, that I am saddened that this has happened in our community as well. Not knowing the facts of anything, but just pure emotion of what has happened here as well. So I want to thank them for that. It's always great to have a human face and different perspective sometimes to what, you know, you would have read or heard otherwise. So again, thanks. I do want to move on and share this month is a celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King's legacy, birthday, and his legacy. On January 17th, Saturday, January 17th, is the annual Greater Ithaca Activity Center, or GIAC MLK Community Breakfast. 9 to 11 at the Beverly J. Martin Elementary School. All are welcome to come out and participate. As always, we're always looking for volunteers to help at the breakfast. It's one of the largest community events celebrating Dr. King. And following that, on the 19th, is the official holiday and day on celebration. Again, at the Beverly J. Martin Elementary School. And again, all are welcome. I'm sorry, I meant to say prior to that as well. On Thursday, January 15th, the actual birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King, the South Side, North Side, South Side Senior Program of Lifelong hosts its annual Martin Luther King Community Luncheon at the Southside Community Center, and I believe that's 11, starts at 11:30 in the day. So three events that I know of and I can share with you, supporting and celebrating the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King junior in our community. That's what I wanted to share.
Thank you, Leslie. Will Burbank?
Thank you, Mike. I want to sort of second Leslin's comments about the folks that came and spoke us about the tragic events in Danby. And thanks, Dan, for telling us how people can do something in response. I was struck by just, and I can't remember the gentleman who said it, but basically the comment that there needs to be a better way. We don't know truly the facts. We don't know what differently could have been done, and we certainly know that those who we asked to serve and serve us through protecting the public and law enforcement have an incredibly difficult and dangerous job, and we do not want to be second guessing them at every step, but somehow this strikes me that there needs to be a better way. Our role as legislators is somewhat indirect. The sheriff is independently elected, but we need to be looking at that whole system. And I sincerely hope we will take that to heart and try to move forward and see if there are better ways in the coming year. The other thing I want to comment, over the holidays, we're very fortunate to have our two children, our grandson, come for a visit. And we just loved having them here. And when it came time for them to leave, I was pleased that both had chosen to fly out of the Tompkins Airport. I mean, that was the good news. The bad news was that both their flights ended up being delayed. I see Barbara over there. She had a similar situation. But what made it sort of, even though they had problems getting where they were trying to do because of the delays, and the delays are part of the problem we're dealing with because there are so few flights and there are small planes and there are all kinds of things that can result in the delay. I cannot speak more highly about how one of the ticket agents dealt with our daughter and our grandson who were flying far. She just really, really worked very hard to see if they could do anything to make their connecting flight, even though they were massively delayed. So we have a great airport. We have really good people working there, but we need to somehow see if we can make the flights be more predictable. At any rate, that is what I wanted to say.
Thank you, Will. Anyone else?
Mr. Chair, may I just say something very quickly? I heard Joanna speak. She's gone now. And I just want to reiterate that one of the things I admire with being on this body is that not once have I, since I've been here, heard any of us, and I'm hoping that it hasn't happened, discourage any member of the public from coming and talking to us about issues that matter to them. Certainly, we ask people to be mindful of personnel matters and the things you read on the card, but we as a body have tried our best to be as responsive as we can possibly be to public concerns. When people come to us and bring issues to us, we may not come out with the resolution one might want necessarily, but it doesn't mean that we do not take the time. And we certainly don't discourage folks from coming to speak to us. And I'm hoping that no one who has ever come to us before has felt threatened by any member of law enforcement that they should not come here and speak out. That would get my whatever they are up in drudgers if that has occurred, and I'm really hoping that's not the case. So please, people listening, watching us, be encouraged that this body, as much as we're able to, try to be responsive and like to hear from people when there are issues. So I just wanted to make sure that's clear.
Thank you. Anyone else? Carol asked if we could do some resolutions for staff that's here, if we could move them ahead. Folks want to do that, or you want to do it regularly? Move ahead?
Let folks go home?
Yes.
All right, why don't we do that? Kathy Luz Herrera, could you please move your resolution C?
Sure. Resolution C is...
Kathy is chair of our Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
Resolution C, appropriation from contingent fund to support payment of living wage at the Recycling and Solid Waste Center.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslie McBean-Claiborne. Discussion.
Well, I'd just like to start out by saying that there's a lot of people that can start to take a victory lap on this. There was a lot of work go into this from staff and from many members of this legislature.
Kathy, close to your microphone.
Oh, sorry. Many members of this legislature put a lot of work into this, among them Leslin, Nathan, Carol, Will. A lot of people have made it clear that this is something that we see as a part of local economic development, and that it's a responsibility of Tompkins County Legislature to try to assure that people have a good quality of life. Moreover, staff has put in a tremendous amount of energy and work into this, and I'd like to recognize right here Barbara Ekstrom, who worked with just all of the players involved, including Jonathan Wood, and wondered if after the seconding comment is made, she would be willing and our chair would be willing to invite her up to speak to us about this resolution.
Certainly. Leslin, you had your hand up?
I did, because I want to give a great big shout out to Milt and Stanley McPherson. I'm sorry that Stanley is not there to enjoy this, because they were positively relentless in bringing this issue before us, in our faces, at where they were employed. It's an issue we've been thinking about, but in the scenario that we're dealing with now, so much so, Stanley even has a show on television now that deals with the issue of living wage. Those gentlemen were poised, they were professional, and I really admire that about them. And it's an example of what I just talked about earlier, about people coming to this body and speaking to us, and we do take the opportunity as best we can to try to be involved and to make change occur. So thanks, Milt and Stanley. I saw Milt the other day, and he gave me a big hug and great big thank you for all of you. But I more so wanted to give the thanks to them for standing up for what they believed in, not just for themselves, but for every employee within this county, whether you are contracted or not. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Kathy suggested that Barbara might want to speak to us. Barbara Ekstrom, Director of Solid Waste. Either way, you can come up here or you can go at the end.
Oh, it's good to be here, and it's really good to hope that this is really going to happen. I've gotten to know folks at the Recycling Center way better than I ever did in the 2 decades I've been here. I've gotten to know people like Pete in the community. I've gotten to know some of you better. And I will tell you that when I was in my early teens, I wanted to get involved in social change. I was particularly interested in environmental issues, but this has been probably one of the most satisfying experiences. A lot of you don't know this, but I came from a family that both my parents were Holocaust survivors and were in concentration camps, and yes, they were Jewish. And so I know a lot about people that have gone through great difficulty in their life. And I can tell you this much, that I hope this is a sustainable situation. And I can tell you that the work that we did when we learned that we could not effectuate this living wage after the contract had been signed, had all to do with developing a skill that I think I've been weaker in than other skills, which was listening and understanding with respect to what could potentially happen that would be a benefit to the employees, a benefit to our programs in terms of reducing waste, and a benefit to the community. So the marriage of doing more at the facility to elevate diversion of reusables in conjunction with our nonprofit partner, Finger Lakes Reuse, that also provides a living wage in terms of diverting more material and letting people know what their options are for not throwing things away. I will say I was desperately worried. This is my final point. I was desperately worried about how things were going to go on January 1 of last year when I got a phone call at 7:42 in the morning on New Year's Day letting me know from the Reed Community Company president while I was still in my PJs about the fact that Reed Community would no longer be operating the recycling center and that their parent, that the original contractor who was co-signing, Casella, would be overseeing this operation. Well, let me tell you this much. I know John Casella very well now. I've kind of known him for years. I've watched him change. I've watched him grow into a person that I really do admire. And, I mean, you know, age does tend to improve us. And I will say that the people that he has, the vice president of recycling out of Boston, who's been real involved in this, and some of the other folks, they actually are pretty special people. Never trust a garbage hauler, however. That's my motto. But on the other hand, they actually have folks that came from this area who went to Cornell, and a woman in urban planning who is their sustainability director, and other good people that work for the company. So I think one of the lessons I've also learned in this process is to be really cognizant of not jumping to conclusions and passing judgment, and to really think about how do we get around the rocks if we're on a canoe, and how do we actually get to where we want to be, and the thing that listening but also patience. And I think that I'm just thrilled to be able to talk about something other than garbage for a change. And thank you all for all that you do to support our programs and our partnerships.
Thank you, Barbara. I think I had Jim Dennis next, then Carol Child.
A couple of short words. It's really too bad Joe is not here. He worked very hard on this along with Jonathan and along with Barbara. And, you know, we're here, and it feels real easy to vote on this, and, you know, but it was a difficult birth, if I can use it that way or say it that way. So kudos to Joe and John and Barbara.
Carol, then Nate.
Yeah, well, I just didn't want to let the moment pass without letting Barb sell herself short. Barb, that was an incredible speech you just gave about the power of, trusting people to be able to hear your own abilities to have helped bring that about. We really thank you for that, and I think you were selling yourself short about your ability to listen, have patience, and help to bring people who came from a different place, that started from a different place, along with playing their own role. People should note that we're putting in $20,000 on this, and Casella, is picking up the difference. And note that
not exactly, but that's okay.
Okay.
I mean,
well,
we're helping by giving them additional work, but yes, they're going to be paying some. We're going to be paying some. You're going to be paying some. And, again, it's all part of that wonderful partnership.
So, yes. But, anyway, I just wanted to recognize you for making this happen. And
thank you, Carol.
And I am pleased that we were able to make this work before having to wait for the end of the current contract.
Thank you, Carol. Nathan?
Yeah, I just wanted to – I mean, I think this is a wonderful moment, and I definitely want to thank Barb and the whole solid waste team and Jonathan and the county attorney's office and Joe and the rest of county administration. Because, you know, this issue, I mean, before we got this news that this was negotiated, you know, the last thing we had heard was, well, it's not a contract here, and so we're going to have to wait till then. And I think that would have been a fine response. And it's all right, well, we can't do anything, so it's okay, and we'll wait till we can. But I think it shows that you all are fantastic public servants, because you said, well, maybe we can keep trying. And you didn't announce it to the world. You didn't send out a press release. You just worked steadily on being able to make this happen, and you delivered. And I think that just shows just the quality of leadership that we have in this county. And so, you know, I really want to thank you for that. I also want to just mention, too, that, you know, with all social change, you know, we tend to look at the big things that happen, right, whether it's the civil rights movement or decisions in Supreme Courts that, you know, overturn, you know, bans on same-sex marriage, things like that. We look at these big moments. But most of change is done in very small ways. You know, it's I remember one time I was one of my first mentors when I started working at the hospital told me that, you know, all things are done on the like success happens on the margins, right? A successful company makes 3% a year and is successful and means they can invest and can keep going forward. You know, presidents win their elections by, you know, fractions of a percent. It's all these little things that we do that end up making such a big difference, you know, and get to that, you know, tipping point. And I think that, you know, it was so powerful to have, you know, Pete in the Worker Center here really pushing for this and then, you know, encouraging us to establish this fund. And that was the big activist moment we needed to move things along. But then I think it's that we should be proud of this legislature that we took that activism and energy and channeled it to find a way to, sometimes it sounds like a bad word, but to institutionalize it. But institutionalized could be bad when it's bad things that are being institutionalized. It could be good things when it's being institutionalized like this, because all that means is that we've taken this idea and now we're creating standard ways in which we can find, which we can do good things, like promote a living wage. And that's what we're seeing with this decision, but we're also seeing with overall our approach to contracted employees is that now with the current process that we have moving forward, we're able to bring people into a living wage. And as much as I love to see Pete, and I think that, you know, that the activists at the Worker Center should always come to and are always welcome here at the legislature, it's also nice to know that they don't have to come, and we're still going to be able to advance this this really important work. So I think that, you know, the legislature itself should be proud of this moment as well. But I think the real thanks goes to our.
I don't know. You have always encouraged me. This will be going into my 27th year. And if it weren't for good leadership, apples don't fall far from the trees.
So. Are we ready to vote? Dooley Kiefer.
I had expected to see a revised resolution. Is there one?
I'm sorry, what revisions were you looking for?
One thing that made a bit clearer what is going on. So may I ask a couple of questions? It's my understanding from everything I've just heard that county staff and administration worked with Casella administration to arrive at a mutually agreeable way to amend the contract, since we couldn't do it unilaterally. Is there no amendment to the contract?
The contract is not amended per se. The contract has an operations plan, which includes the various operations as well as the cost of various things, and that regularly changes over time. It changes as we recycle different items, as prices in the markets change. So there are some changes, but they're reflected in the operations plan. There's not really a change to the contract.
Okay. I have another question. Was I correct in saying that administration staff and Casella worked together to arrive at these changes reflected in the resolution?
That's definitely correct.
And can you tell us whether or not Casella has adjusted any other wages besides the ones being raised to a livable wage? Have they adjusted other wages accordingly?
Yeah, I can, but Barbara can take that.
I'm intimately familiar with this, of course. When Milton made mention in his speech that we heard that everybody at Casella was going to be affected in terms of operating the recycling center, he was absolutely correct. What will happen essentially is that everyone will be bumped up according to their skill sets and their positions at the company other than the manager at that operation.
Thank you. So just in looking at this, I think the title of the resolution should say to support payment of a living wage. You just need a word before living.
Yeah, it was my understanding, Julie, that you were going to suggest those kind of minor changes.
Well, then I wanted to say in line 12 and 13, which is what I just learned now, Casella estimates that it would cost approximately $105,000 a year to raise the pay of the employees to a living wage and adjust other employee wages accordingly. So that would be a suggestion, which apparently is accurate.
Well, accordingly is not accurate enough for me.
What would be a better word?
Well, it depends on what's being done. This is one of the things about living wage that always gets me, and I'm going to take a moment to editorialize, if I may. We hear from employers that it's not possible for them to pay a living wage because it would mean that some of their employees would be beginning paid too close to or more than their supervisors or people in roles that require more skills or judgment. I've always felt that that's the responsibility of the employer and that it shouldn't be the responsibility necessarily of government or contracts. That's why I believe that what Jonathan and Casella and Barbara have done here is so extraordinary because they managed to get wording about providing additional services, and what they've done is what they're saying is it's not equivalent, it's not appropriate. They're not using the words that you're using because, in fact, to do that would require setting up a wage scale that means that everyone gets a bump to a certain level, and how do you say what that level is or how much it should be? It gets us into an arena that I don't think we should be in. That's just me, and I'm editorializing. Now somebody can make sense of that. But I'll tell you, I thought the first thing you said was friendly, a living wage. I'm for that. The second one, not so much.
As I understand it, that's what they're doing, from what I thought Barbara just said, that they are the company is paying a living wage to everyone.
Julie, that second part is apparently not friendly. So can we get to what was friendly? And I know you wanted that change to a living wage in the whole resolution. Is that right?
No, it's correct as the in several places, but the title needs an A.
All right,
and line six needs an A.
All right,
that's all.
All right. Anything else minor like that? Maybe it could be friendly, and then we'll come back if you want to move the other as an amendment.
Yes. From what Jonathan just said, I think line 22 might be correct to say, as part of a revised operating plan, the county administrator recommends providing supplemental funding in the amount of $20,000 to the 2015 Solid Waste Division that will in turn... It's part of a revised operating plan, not a contract amendment. So that would clarify that. That's another suggestion.
Does it say it's a contract amendment here?
No, I was trying to understand whether it was or not.
Okay.
It turns out it's a revised operating plan, which would help clarify this, I would think. I think it would be really easier to read if lines 15 through 20... Those are two separate whereases, were the opening whereases in this resolution. The first one says, by resolution 167 adopted in 2003, we had a policy to adopt living wages, whatever it says. And then the next one is, that we directed this most recently $100,000 be available to make this happen. So those two are the things that the county has done, and they lead into what the contractor, Casella, does. It flows pretty easily that way, and then the rest of it flows clearer without interruption, I think.
I'm not sure what your suggestion just
moving
was.
Moving those two whereases to the top.
The top of?
The resolution.
Making them the first two whereases you're suggesting. Not changing the wording of them.
Those are okay.
So that's friendly, along with the A living wage and the title is friendly. Anything else?
Yes, I'm looking at lines 29 and 30.
I should ask the seconder, is that friendly?
I did, I answered.
Thank you.
Lines 29 and 30. Nothing in this action is intended, nor should it be construed to be a commitment by the county to make any extra funding available in the future. So I would add the words extra funding, and I would add available, because there's no verb. So that's...
We could find different ways to say it, but I agree it clarifies it. I'm okay with that.
You all right with that, Leslie?
I am fine with
it. Anything else? All right, so
no.
If not, then if you want to change that other thing, then you'd need to move an amendment.
I understand, and I haven't really had time to write stuff the way I wanted to, so I will try once more as an amendment. Whereas part, this is line 22, whereas part of a revised operating plan, whereas the county administrator has reported that as part of a revised operating plan, he recommends providing supplemental funding in the amount of $20,000 to the 2015 County Solid Waste Division that will in turn enable workers at the Recycling and Solid Waste Center to be paid a living wage or the living wage.
That would not be correct.
I don't want to do anything that's not correct.
Yeah, that wouldn't be correct. There's nothing in the operating plan about the $20,000. The operating plan just reflects the additional services that they will provide, as well as the cost of those services. Doesn't include the $20,000.
Where does the $20,000 come from? Why are we doing it?
It comes from the contingency fund, and we're doing it to encourage these other things to happen, but the $20,000 is not in the operations plan.
It's required for us to pay $20,000 to enable Casella to provide additional services or pay their own employees better wages.
There is additional services, which Barbara described, so including reuse and some other services, that are in the operations plan, including costs for those services, which will help us get to that $105,000. The $20,000 will help, as well as Casella's throwing in money. So it's all of these things. But the operations plan only reflects the changes in the operation as well as the cost of those changes.
Okay. So I guess what I would like to see is what our $20,000 is doing. And if it's going toward paying living wage, that's fine. But I don't think it's real clear in the way this is written what the $20,000 is for. It seemed to be tied to additional services the way it was written. But
It's my understanding it is tied to additional services, but it's for the overall cost that the department will be experiencing because of the change in the operation plan. Is that correct, John?
You can say it like that. I mean, there's no mention specifically of the $20,000 in the operations plan, because the operation plan deal with basically with operations, what those operations are going to be, down to the last detail, as well as what the cost of each such operation is going to be. As part of the overall agreement, we said that we'd bring to the legislature this resolution, essentially, that we would throw in $20,000. I mean, Casella is really making a significant contribution here, and this is really the county's contribution to that. Yes, we are receiving additional services, but the additional services are not outlined in the operation plan in connection with the $20,000. The $20,000 isn't specifically mentioned in the operations plan.
Kathy? Wait a minute. Dooley, I don't know if I have a proposal for an amendment at this point.
Well, I don't either. I've been trying to understand what Jonathan has said. And all I want to do is make it clear what the $20,000 is for. And if it's our contribution, permanent contribution toward Casella paying livable wage and more.
It is the county's contribution. It is not permanent. That's why we say, this is done on an annual basis. If the county chooses not to allot money in next year's budget for living wage, then it can't say that it's permanent. That's up to the discretion of the legislature. It is to offset the costs of living wage that Casella will be paying.
Then probably in line 23 it should say $20,000 to the 2015 County Solid Waste Division budget, because it's just to this year's budget.
Correct.
Okay, so maybe the word budget should go in, and that will take care of it.
I'm okay with that.
That's fine.
Is that friendly?
That is very fine.
Thank you for helping me understand this.
Say again so Kathy Colbert can get that where you want it.
Line 23, County Solid Waste Division budget.
Okay.
Thank you for your patience.
I think we're close to a vote. Do you folks need to talk some more? Go ahead, Kathy, and then Carol.
Thanks. Just by way of winding this up, I want to say I'm glad that everybody pointed out how big a task this was and how many people came into it. As Barbara pointed out, and as most of us around the table are aware, making a commitment to social justice is a lifetime endeavor, and we do try to pace ourselves. As those of us that were involved with the Living Wage Committee will remember, we've got 17 pages of Tompkins County contracts by department, and as Joe and others helped us understand, the majority of those do pay a living wage. That's good. We've worked on that for a long time, and the recent additions to Tompkins Community Action, to the food bank, and to others have shown a commitment on the part of our local nonprofits. The what's the name of the compost folks?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, our mom and pop long-term contract with Cayuga Compost. Cayuga Compost, when it was approved with the living wage consideration, also pays a living wage. And they're not even a national company. They're a local mom and pop that are growing with us with the food scrap composting.
So part of what we're doing is expanding a knowledge on the local and regional level of how important it is to keep local dollars at home by paying workers well. Our task is far from done. And the fact is we need to understand that there's a commitment to a return for our taxpayer dollars here. I think that we've amply demonstrated that the Solid Waste Center and the Solid Waste Division are committed to finding ways to improve our community, and they've, how can I say this, they've made it real in the sense here where workers weren't being paid a living wage, and now they are. This is huge. It's not easy. But the first steps, as Nathan said and as many others have said, are on the margins. So, again, you know, we can take a victory lap, but pace yourselves because we still have a lot more to do. Thank you, everybody, and I hope we can go directly to a vote from here.
Well, Carol gets to wrap up, and then we vote.
I,
I just want to make sure that we're doing enough in here to recognize Casella. I think one of the issues that we talked about when we talked about a living wage was that we can't do this by ourselves. And I want to be able to signal to other contractors who aren't there yet that, you know, that we're not doing this on our own. I don't know the right place to put it in here, but Barb, is there a place that you would?
Yeah, the only thing I'd be cautious about, I'm glad Kathy brought up Cuyahoga Compost. I really don't want to just, I mean, every single one of our contracts now either pays a prevailing wage or a living wage, and we have many of them. And yes, we can give kudos to this company, but there are also the unsung heroes as well. And I think the fact that this legislature is taking action where a budget consists of, you know, a good 70% in privatized contracts is what I think you need to make mention of, as opposed to, say, you know, one company or another. They know, you know, we will share the information. I'll be talking with John Casella after the vote, and we will certainly be able to, and maybe Joe can send a letter on behalf of the legislature or something along those lines to keep it simple.
Yeah, I'd be content with making sure that staff in all our departments who are responsible going into the future for negotiating contracts understand that it's something that we've been able to achieve in this difficult field, and that we, you know, that if you, that we encourage them to expect it when they negotiate contracts, and that if you expect it, contractors, you know, who want to be the low bidders, step up.
All right. Thank you, Carol. On Resolution C, which is the appropriation from contingent fund for the support to support payment of a living wage at Recycling and Solid Waste Center, as we have some minor consent changes on that. This is a short form roll call vote, and the clerk will call it.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Is there anyone who'd like to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Thank you. Woo-hoo. I'd like to move into the resolutions out of planning. I just want to caution folks that at about 7:30, we're going to have a presentation out of the broadband committee. Let's not go too long on these. Let's be crisp in our debate. Carol, would you move Resolution E?
Yeah, I just want to ask before I forget about it, though, Resolution B is on the consent agenda, so I'm not sure,
let's take the ones on the regular agenda and then come back.
Okay, Resolution E. Is making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to the resolution we'd also be passing of 2014 or 15, Kathy? Should that say 2014 or 2015? The title.
14. Oh, 15, sorry. Yes.
So we should change that to 15. I hope that's okay. So I'll start again. Resolution E, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to the resolution that doesn't have a number yet of 2015, appropriating funds from the Capital Reserve Fund for natural, scenic, and recreational resource protection for the additions to the Lindsay, Parsons, and Roy H. Park preserves. And I'll move that, and if there's a second,
Seconded by Dooley Kiefer. Discussion? Are we ready to vote?
I just want to point out for anybody who hasn't had a chance to look in detail at the many pages here that it is New York State that requires this revised and shortened the negative deck form, that the operative page, one of the pages I found most operative is the map on page 13. That really outlines where this is that we're talking about and what it is we're talking about.
Ready to vote on the negative declaration. All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed? That's unanimous. Can we have F?
And then F. Why do I have E and not F in my back here?
Page 32.
Package. Page 32. Okay. Don't have a yellow one. So this is the main resolution appropriating funds from the Capital Reserve Fund for natural, scenic, and recreational resource protection for the additions to the Lindsay Parsons and Roy H. Park Preserves.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in, well, we have a short form roll call. Jim, do you have a comment?
No.
All right, short form roll call, please.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
And he knows. It's unanimous. Thank you. Carol G.
Okay. Gee, there's a revised version in your packets as adopted by the committee earlier this afternoon. There are minor revisions. It is a resolution G, authorizing 2015 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant application for TCAT, Inc. And I so move, along with the explanation that's on packet page 35 about that and how it works.
Was there a second? Seconded by Martha. Discussion? Dooley?
I'm looking at line 19, which says what the total amount of funding is and what it is from federal, state, and TCAT, which adds up to that amount. And then I'm looking at line 28, which gives the same total amount and mentions federal, New York State, and TCAT, but it also says funds are from the county and other sources, and I don't see those other sources listed, so I see a discrepancy, and I want to ask about that.
Dwight Mengel's here. Could he respond to that, please?
The county, the words county and other could be deleted.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the other thing I would like to ask about, a change I'd like to recommend in line 6.
I'm sorry, could you tell me where that change just was? I apologize, I didn't
line,
see.
Line 29.
This revised doesn't have line numbers.
It's the second resolved, the second line of that. She's asking that we take out county and other, because in this case, it's a template resolution, and in this case, the sources of funding are from those others that are listed.
Okay, including federal, New York State, TCAT, and TCAT.
Yes.
Got it. Thank you.
Just friendly.
In line 6, which is the second whereas, it reads, whereas the County of Tompkins is the direct recipient by the Governor of New York State for the FTA section program. I think it should say whereas the County of Tompkins is designated the direct recipient by the Governor, or has been designated.
I'm seeing a nod from Dwight. Is that friendly? Okay.
Then I consider it friendly. If it's friendly to Dwight, it's friendly to me.
All right. Okay, with those changes, are we ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I think that's unanimous. Before we go on, I just want to back up to Resolution F. And, Carol, I believe there was a revised version of that, and I'm assuming you moved that one. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Just clarification.
Was it revised?
It was just saying this instead of the.
Okay, then yes.
Okay, we got something.
There is.
What's Fernando waiting for?
Oh no, it's F. This is F for talking.
Fernando, which resolution are you waiting for?
On the consent agenda.
On the consent. All right. Why don't we do the consent agenda? But before that, I'm going to have to ask for resolutions to be added and withdrawn. And, Carol, I think you want to add an appointment to to the consent agenda?
Oh, yes. We do have an appointment, and I have papers.
I'm sorry. I guess it's Will is supposed to do that.
Yes,
Kathy's,
it would be Will.
Kathy's prompting me over here.
Thank you. And right before I was given a sheet asking for the addition for Christy Agonese to the Strategic Tourism Planning Board. I have to say, Mike, the committee actually had done a whole series of appointments. Was there some reason we were only doing the one?
No, that's the one to be added. I've
had one. Okay.
Two, three, four other ones that we're going to do on the consent agenda already.
Okay, thank you. So okay. please add that one.
That's been moved. Does someone want to second at the addition of that appointment to the consent agenda? Carol, all those in favor? Opposed? That's unanimous. All right, let me read the appointments to the advisory boards out of the Economic Development Committee, the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Kelly Cartmill, Josh Friedman, Rita Rosenberg-Barber, Susan Stafford, and Kathy Agonese.
Christy.
Also on the consent agenda, we have some resolutions out of Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Resolution A, I love this title. It's ID 5318, authorization to accept final installment of the, quote, two-year results magnified, unquote, grant from the Community Foundation of Tompkins County Social Justice Fund to support continuation of the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee Reading and Discussion Program. And Resolution B, out of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, that's ID 5313, authorization to accept a grant from the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, NYSERDA, for electric vehicle feasibility analysis out of the Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council. I think that's the consent agenda. Someone want to move the acceptance? Moved by Dooley, seconded by Martha. Discussion? All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand.
Aye.
All those opposed? That's unanimous. All right, let's go back to, I don't see our presenter here yet, so we'll just move along. Chair's report, one thing I wanted to mention, and maybe while Fernando's still here for a minute, is that the truck working group, which Barbara Lifton has organized with representatives for the Department of Transportation, the City of Ithaca, and Tompkins County, along with Fernando from our MPO, has had meetings and has some discussion recommendations that are going to be coming out. I believe there was a press release today. There will be a meeting on the 15th of January in which we're going to invite the public in to make suggestions about improvements for the issues of dangerous trucks coming into the city, particularly on, say, Martin Luther King State Street and Aurora Street, those kinds of things. So we appreciate the work that Fernando, and he's been doing a lot of great work here for us, analyzing some of our sometimes spaced out discussion. But it's important work, and we've having wonderful cooperation. And our thanks to Barbara Lifton for helping to organize this, and the state DOT for the extensive work they're doing on that. Move to reports by the county administrator. We have our deputy county administrator, Paula Younger, here tonight.
Thank you, Michael. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of the gentleman from Indiana, he is driving back as we speak from North Carolina. And so your county administrator will be back in the office later on this week. But until then, it's my pleasure to be here this evening with you. And I just have a few short updates. The county administrator would like for you to know that he is working with the department heads to compile the annual department accomplishment list. And he plans to present that to you next month. It will probably be a busy month for you in February because we should have available to you the report from the County Compliance Committee on the work that we've been doing throughout 2014. We have some additional information to share. The combination of that will serve as your annual county compliance training, and so you'll be able to sign those attestation forms at the end of that presentation in February. Just wanted to let you know that the Workplace Climate Survey Initiative is moving along. We have a 10-person team that has begun the implementation of an outreach plan geared towards employee engagement to educate all staff about the purpose of the survey, its goals, and so forth, and, of course, hopefully to get 100% participation. We're doing a number of different things. I'm sure you all have seen the email that went out December 22nd, signed by our chair of the legislature, also the chair of WDIC and the county administrator. That's sort of the first of many messages that we'll be rolling out throughout the month. We hope to have flyers. We're going to also have an FAQ on the website for all staff to refer to, so we're moving along with that. We also have an additional 8-member team that is the survey review team, and we have received the first draft of the survey, and so we are looking at that now and hoping to give the contractors some feedback on that later in the week. We might have to alter our launch date a little bit, but right now we're still on schedule. I do want to take the opportunity to thank all of the members of these various teams for their involvement in keeping this project moving forward thus far, also given the fact that we had to begin this during the holiday season. So when most people are making that extra room on their plate for some holiday turkey, they actually added this initiative to their to-do list, and I do think that I just appreciate it. And their commitment to this has been, for me, it has been both impressive and humbling. So I just wanted to say thank you, and I'm sure at the end of the project I'll be able to give you the long list of names of those folks that are involved. And the only other thing I will say is thank you very much for the acceptance of the grant. That means that we will have the continuation of our reading and discussion program this spring, and we hope within the next month or two, we being the reading and discussion coordination group, hope to bring forward to WDIC the results of the participant feedback. But I would like to let you know that so far we've had 34 participants go through the program, representing 14 different county departments across all of the 5 staffing levels that we have here. So it's been a good program, and I thank you very much, and the Community Foundation.
Thank you, Paula. Questions for Paula? Julie Kiefer.
Is there any update for us yet on a retreat with legislative and department heads?
I don't know about the planning for that. I do know there is something where we want to do something within the first quarter, but I don't have a date. But I know that we do have a department head meeting coming up next week where I know Joe wants to go over some topics and get some feedback from folks.
It's the date I'm worried about. Thanks.
Anyone else? Thank you. Jonathan Wood is our county attorney.
Yeah, I want to report that we have a new deputy county attorney. He's Bill Troy. Some of you may know him. He actually already started on Monday. Steve Flash, that was January 2nd was his last day. Bill, who will be primarily the juvenile prosecutor, but also help out mostly on civil matters. He was an assistant district attorney in Manhattan for many years before coming here and running basically a civil practice. And we're really lucky to get someone as qualified as he. And you will get the opportunity to meet him. If you don't know him, I think the first February meeting, not the next one, because I'll be out of town and he'll be covering for me. So if you don't know him, you'll have an opportunity to meet him then. And that's my report.
Questions for Jonathan? Martha Robertson.
Did you say Bill Choi or Troy?
Troy, T-R-O-Y.
As in Helen of. Okay, that's brings us up to Mr. Good News. Rick Snyder, our director of finance.
I always bring good news. If you turn to your sales tax distribution summary, it's in your red folder like this. We are 11/12 of the year finished. Quite satisfying is the sales tax distribution summary for November. A quick recap will show that the sales tax distributions for November for the county were up 11.07%, and that is compared to November of 2013.
a month-to-month comparison. If you move over to the right-hand columns, comparing year-to-date 2013 to year-to-date 2014, you can see that the county's portion totals $30,334,097 compared to $29,110,170 in 2013. This represents an increase of $1,223,927 year over year, or a 4.2% increase. That's year to year. From a budget perspective, we should be at 91.7% of our budget, looking at 11/12 of the year. But collections are actually at 92.5% of budget, so we are over by 0.8%. So that's good news, and we have one more month to go. And that's all I have for tonight.
All right. Well, that's pretty good. Martha Robertson has a question.
Yeah, if I read this right, the looks like the city, that growth is like entirely within the city from November to November. I mean, 22% in the city?
The city has outpaced for that one month tremendously, the city of Ithaca, yes, at 22%.
Outside the city, 0.8%. It's an increase, but less than 1%.
Right, and those do vary considerably from month to month, the distribution.
That's really big. Okay, thank you.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Rick, we had a meeting that you were at earlier before the ledge meeting, and we kept recommended that the authorization to extend the additional 1%. Is that going to get voted on in the second meeting? Okay. I rest my case. All right. Thank you.
I didn't want to lose that one. That was a nodded yes from our board clerk.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome.
Where'd Dave go? Anyway, why don't we break at 7:30? Let's take a 10-minute break and perhaps. Oh, there's Chuck. Chuck, maybe that'll give you an opportunity to set up, and then we'll. Well, you can find a chair, and then we'll come back and we'll hear from the broadband committee. Can we take our seats, please?
Too hard.
The other problem I had is I didn't know where the other end of the car was.
Take our seats, please. Okay, we're back in session, and I'm going to turn to Dave McKenna, who chairs the Broadband Committee. Dave, I think you want to introduce a presentation tonight.
Yeah, I'd like to introduce Chuck Bartosh, who's the president and CEO, I believe, of Clarity Connect.
Indeed.
And he's kindly agreed to give us an update on the status of the expansion of broadband throughout the county. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Chuck.
Thanks, Dave. And this does apparently work. That's good. Just really quickly, I'll give you guys a quick update, a historical update. Over two years ago, there was a state initiative to roll out broadband. State had $25 million to give out. There were, I forget how many winners now, but probably roughly a dozen or so, and we were one of them. And that was awarded. Closing date for that application was October 7th or something like that of 2012. In 2013, March 6th, the awards were given out. We did win an award, as people know, of about $2.2 million for Tompkins and Cayuga County. That actually turns out didn't mean anything, and you have to get something called a GDA, a grant disbursement agreement, before you actually have authority to get any money. They told us right away to get started. They told us by telephone when I called them. We actually didn't get anything in writing until probably October of 2013, saying that we had actually won the grant, but there was a news release saying we did. But the first time they actually talked to us and told us we did was October. But that meant nothing. It wasn't until September of this year that we actually got the grant disbursement agreement, which allowed us to actually potentially submit anything. At that point, we had actually already done about $1.5 million worth of work in the project, which is all the money we could scrape up from whatever sources. And we had to get an outside audit. There's a bunch of stuff we had to do. We were able to submit for reimbursement on December 4th. That's when they accepted the submittal. By contract, they don't pay us in less than 90 days. So nominally, if we're lucky, we'll get reimbursed on March 4th or thereabouts, though it could take longer. Now, that's the official, I'll call it the official word of where things stand. Up to now, I will say a couple of things. One is the state office itself that we're working with. It's a relatively new office. It started off, when this project started, there were only two people. There's now an assistant to the assistant to the assistant, so there's four people, which is great. They really do work really, really hard, and they're great people, and they were very responsive, but this is all new to them. So part of the reason I think it took so long is they didn't know what was going on in terms of what all the things that had to be done from a state perspective, but they're doing a good job. So even though it's taken a long time, I think it's not fair to levy any kind of criticism of that, just how things are. Meanwhile, they are trying to get reimbursements done faster, at least this first time. Whether that'll happen or not, I don't know, because they don't actually control the purse strings. It's, other people in the state. So that's where we're at from a fiscal perspective. The project in the end is about a $4 million project, by the way. Officially something like a three, but really it's more like a $4 million project. There were four towns, as people know, or five towns actually dropped out of the project, three in Cayuga County, two in Tompkins County. That was Enfield and Caroline. Enfield, we were able to re-engineer the project and by moving things around, and instead of getting the absolute best coverage in some areas, maybe less than the best, so that we could spread things out and get Enfield. So Enfield's basically covered, maybe 93% covered or something like that in this project, in the redesign. Caroline, however, took, that was the Caroline was 1/14 of the population of the project, and they were, in order to do Caroline, would have taken 1/7 of the resources, which is part of why the state cut it out. One might hope that the way these things are done is that the people who most need it, and most need it would be defined as those who aren't going to get it any other way because it's too expensive, would get first priority. But there's politics too, right? They want to be able to claim how many people they're serving with the money. So there's competing interests in that respect. And I think it's fair, that's part of politics. You have to balance needs. So that, however, is why Caroline got cut. Surprisingly, in some ways, Senator Seward, who happens to cover three of the towns that were cut, two in Cayuga County and Caroline, did find a way to generate money through the Dormitory Authority. So we've got some funds to do Caroline. Maybe, I'm not sure what percentage of Caroline, but Caroline will get at least 3/4 done, I think, and maybe 100% done, who knows. But there's something we're still working on. And similarly with Summerhill and Sopronius, the other two towns on that side of in Seward's territory, they also got funds. Ledyard itself, the town came up with roughly $35,000, and a private donor came up with another $35,000 to help finish that project, that part of the project, a town that was cut out. So all in all, I think we're basically going to be able to do all 14 towns despite the cutting of about close to $800,000 out of the project from the state, from the original proposal. So that's where we're, again, that's really where we're at on a financial perspective. From a build-out perspective, the map that you have, the blue and yellow areas are the areas that are now covered by, some of this is duplicated over coverage we already had, but this is stuff that's provided by the new infrastructure. And so you can see basically the thin red outlines are the town outlines in Tompkins County. And like I said, the blue and yellow areas are areas that can now be seen with the new infrastructure that's already in place. Most of the money that's been spent so far really, though, is infrastructure in terms of building the platform for doing the rest of the build-out. So that's the kind of thing we're waiting for. And meanwhile, in the unserved areas, we've got something like close to 50% of the residents have already signed up, showing I think the actually incredible pressure or demand for the service. Traditionally, typically, at 1 year after a project is completed, a typical ISP or internet service provider will have about 12% signed up, and a really aggressive ISP will have 18% signed up. And after 3 years, an ISP that's doing a really good marketing job will get maybe 33, 32%, something like that. That's statistically on NetBook nationally and on the East Coast for new buildouts. The fact that we have 50% already signed up is really pretty incredible. So the marketing has been good, at least. The danger in that, of course, is we can't provide service to a lot of the people yet. So, but nonetheless, that's where we're at. And it looks like there's a question over here, possibly, or your hands just like this. Yes.
Yeah. Peter Stein.
Thanks. The people that you're serving don't have any alternative, right?
Most of the people, the point of this project is to serve people who do not have access to any other service. That doesn't mean we can't serve people who do have other alternatives.
Right, right.
Chuck, if you're about 3 inches from your mic, I think it picks up and you'll get that in and out.
Okay, sure. Like this?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
So how much do they pay?
If you pay monthly, it's $49.95 a month, and if you're paying yearly, it's $39.95 a month. So, and most probably about a little over 50% of people pay the year in advance kind of thing. And if you're on free and reduced lunch, we'll roll that program out with schools that are interested. It's typically $19.95 a month, so a 60% discount if you're on free and reduced lunch. We also have a program.
If you're on what? What was that?
If you're on free and reduced lunch and you get authorized by the schools,
okay.
You get a 60% discount. And if you are using the unemployment board services, we've got an arrangement with anybody who's basically using their services also gets a 60% discount, $19.95 a month.
So the other 15% have just, I would have expected a higher number of I would have thought everybody wants
50%.
It.
Oh, 50%. 50%.
Yeah, so I'm surprised it's not more.
I think part of it's reaching out to people. I would love it if there was more, but traditionally when people don't have service, reaching them to let them know that there is service available is difficult. And even in the state of New York, where service is available, only 78% subscribe. So, and that's where, in most of those places, service has been available for, 15 years or more?
Yeah.
So, being 50% when it's not even available yet, it's actually pretty, really high.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a tremendous change for the county. I think it's just a wonderful thing to be able to give everybody internet access. It puts them into a different age.
It does. And you know, frankly, I will throw in a plug. I did this last time, but this wouldn't have actually happened without the efforts of Dave McKenna, Pat Pryor, Paula, and also the county administrator, all of which, and Jonathan Wood also helped in significant ways. They all were, my view is they were critical to us getting this and being able to implement it.
Oh, congratulations.
We had Dooley next, then Jim, then Dan. We got a whole list. Okay. Let's start with Dooley.
Where is she? Oh, there she is.
You talk fast, so I didn't hear your description of the map other than the red lines. What is the
Oh, sorry.
The yellow?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I do speak quickly, and it's a fly I've been unable to to conquer, but I will try.
It's fine. You have to pay attention.
Exactly. All right. The blue areas are the highest signal levels and the best potential service. For basic level service, it doesn't matter if it's blue or yellow, but blue can get the highest possible speeds if we chose to give it. The yellow areas are acceptable areas where people will get can get the basic package, which is 6 megs down, 1.5 megs up in terms of service speed. The blue areas can go potentially much faster. And there's also one other kind of thing is about a year and a half from now, something like that, about a year from now, we will upgrade to a new technology. The radios we're using are software-defined radios, and the potential speeds will rise from probably 12 megabits per second up to 25 or so megabits per second. That doesn't mean people will get that because we may or may not give it to them, but it's capable of much higher speeds.
What is fog knob?
That's interesting. I left that on there, but that's right. Fog knob is a tower. It was a pre-existing tower that, in the original design, we were just going to be on it. It turned out the tower was 60 plus years old and was amazing. It was still standing. So we basically bought the owner out and rebuilt the tower so that it could actually do what we needed. Green, like the green stick pin or the green woods? Oh, this is called New York State, which is, as I tell people, we live in a forest. So the green is the woods. It's a satellite view.
But you have coverage.
We have coverage over top of the trees, wherever the blue and yellow is.
Jim?
You mentioned Caroline. How much more money would have been needed to build them?
To actually finish Caroline, this is slightly from memory, but I believe it's $386,000. And at the moment, we have probably $186,000. The $186,000 covers more than half, even though it's only about half the money that's needed.
Dan?
So, Chuck, the blue and yellow areas that have coverage, is that area going to be expanded? Is this the map of everything that will be covered?
This is the map of everything that is currently today covered as of, January 4th or 5th or whatever, 5th, I guess, from today, by the new infrastructure.
And how much more area do you expect to be covered when the
About 95% of the county.
Okay. You mentioned this a little bit, but I wanted to ask you, so how do people know that they are now in an area that's covered?
One of the things, we have not started out that part of the marketing. That's actually something I talked to staff about just yesterday, which is it's interesting because you can't run a newspaper ad and say you're covered because a lot of people aren't covered, right? And the one option is to go door to door. So I mean, it's not a question that I know the answer to specifically. One of the thoughts is working with the town boards and saying, all right, these guys, here's the area that's covered now. If you want to reach out to them and let them know, please do. Now, right now, what happens, one of the reasons we get so many people signing up ahead of time is we are prioritizing which areas we turn up. These are areas that are turned up already, but once we have funds again, we'll prioritize the areas that we can turn up based on what percentage of the possible signups have pre-signed up. So if you've got an area that's got 100 people and 25 have signed up, and another area where there's 30 households and 15 have signed up, we'll actually roll out first to the area that has 15 households, not the place that has 25 households, because it's 50% signed up versus 25% that signed up.
And when you say signed up, does that mean contacted you?
Registered on our website.
So I did that.
Yes.
Several years ago. It's a little hard to tell, but it looks like I'm in a yellow or blue area.
Uh-huh.
Will I hear from you?
You will hear from us.
Okay.
Yes, if you actually did sign up, you will hear from us. The one thing that's there are some things we're still tuning. I don't want to say what we did wrong, but we did something wrong that we're trying to back down. I will say we're currently getting better coverage than we expected, but that's because we are doing something we need to fix, so which will reduce coverage.
Is this map tied in? I'm about to reach my technological limit here. Is this map tied in with GIS? In other words, can you tell that a yellow area on this map, can you link that to addresses?
If I had permission from the county, yes. The answer is absolutely. This is a Google Earth document, and the county's E911 data is available when they export it to in Kugler format. And so with that data, absolutely, I can tell which houses by address are served. I don't have permission to do that, and I have not asked for permission to do that.
That's not the only database of how to find out where someone's house is.
Maybe. What I'll tell you this is that one of the difficulties right now is, for example, if you registered in our database, put in your address, we can only use Google Earth right now, Google Earth's location of where you are, which is not where your house is. And it doesn't, of course, it's a centroid of something that I'm not sure what it is. So it's not impossible that if you're close to a boundary that has service and doesn't have service, Google Earth may have put you as located outside, even though your house might be in it, it may put you outside of it.
Just one more question, if I may. So if you had, let's say, access to the E911 database or some other database that would enable you to tell whether a specific house was in the zone, that would enable you to do a mailing.
Correct.
Is that something that you think you will be doing?
Well, I have not asked for, and I don't know who to ask, but I have not asked for that capacity. But one option might be, but the county has to decide if they can do this, is I could say, here's the area, and maybe you guys could. I don't know what the county, I don't even know who to talk to about this.
Well,
to get access.
Pretend
talk to me, Chuck.
I talked to you, okay.
pretend you had access to that database.
Yes.
Would you then, I mean, as a market,
absolutely, then we would.
Then would that be your next step?
That would absolutely be our next step.
I am looking forward to that piece of mail. Thank you.
All right. That will come very soon, like tomorrow or tonight.
Questions? I have Martha, Peter, then Carol.
Right. I should say the email to him.
Yeah, no, I think that's, we have that information. We should figure out how to make that work. So the green areas, not just that those are trees, but are you saying that those are areas that already have coverage?
No. No, the green areas that we've not rolled out to yet. We have to wait till state reimbursement comes in so we can finish the build-out. Once the build-out is finished, this map will essentially be nothing but blue and yellow.
Okay, you had a project in the town of Dryden.
Well, right. Dryden already has coverage and is green in this map because it is, what I'm showing you in this map is only where we've increased coverage, or the new coverage, basically, from the new infrastructure. So you're absolutely right. If you look at the boundary of Dryden, that's covered, mostly.
Okay, I also noticed, like, much of the, especially the northeast town of Ithaca and Lance and southeast of Lansing, you know, there's a lot of coverage there. Didn't they already have coverage?
Well, they already have coverage. As I'll repeat one more time just to make it clear, this map is not meant to illustrate, because I don't know how to do it, only the increased coverage from what was available before, both from us, Time Warner, Lightlink, whatever the other providers are. I've got no way to subtract that out. So what this map is the coverage provided by the new infrastructure, some of which duplicates coverage we already had and others already had. So does that make sense?
Okay.
Because there's no way to do what you're asking, even
right,
though I'd love to.
Okay. So if you've got potential clients in areas that are, where they already have coverage, does that mean there'll be people will have a choice?
Well, hopefully, yeah. I mean, that's one of the state's goals, is to give people a choice. That's not our personal goal. Our personal goal is to make sure we get, our corporate goal is to get coverage to people who have no choice. But absolutely, the state wants competition.
Okay.
Peter?
All right, thanks.
Yeah, you just answered the question I was going to ask before. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Carol?
Yeah, me too. But could you translate for non-techies the megabits per second that you mentioned? What does that enable people to do?
If you're watching a typical Netflix kind of video, your ideal minimum is around 2 megabits per second. You can watch Netflix successfully with less than 1 megabit per second. You can get HD, full HD TV at 4 megabits per second. Okay, and our minimum speed is 6 megabits per second, and this is all download speeds. When you're sending stuff, our limit is about 1.5 megabits per second. In contrast, Time Warner, for example, is typically around 10 megabits per second download. It varies depending on where you are. And the upload speed on Time Warner is 768K to 1 meg. So we're faster in the upload, somewhat slower in the download. Though, for most people, for whatever you're doing, it doesn't matter. Now, the other thing is that when we say speeds, and this is true of everybody, the way we figure is that for 75% of the day, in other words, 20 hours of the day, you should be able to get full speed. During the four busiest hours, you're going to get something less. Our design goal is no less than half the full speed, but that's the design goal.
Yeah, it really changes. Right? You can tell when everybody gets home from work and
on. Yep.
Okay. Chuck, we really thank you for coming in and bringing mm-hmm. us up to date on this. It's an amazing project for all of Tompkins County. Bringing many, many people in the rural areas. I'm thrilled to hear about your 50% participation so far. Mm-hmm. I think that's amazing to get people to do that. And we just know how important it is for young people in particular to be able to have access nowadays to computers and the information that they can make readily available.
Mm-hmm. Old people, too.
So the old people can keep in contact with their kids.
Thank you. Dan?
Sorry, just one more quick question. So, Chuck, if somebody looks at this map and says, I think I'm in that area, can they contact you and say, am I in this area?
Well, they can. The ideal is to send an email to staff, but they can also call. To a limited extent, people can ask me, but I can't field, 2,000 calls either. If they ask me, I'd look directly and
see. I didn't mean you personally.
Okay.
Your business. So if someone contacts your business and says, I think I'm in this, you can say yes or no, and you can...
Yeah, though I want to probably limit that for people doing that. It's better if they simply register, and here's why. Let's say that it's not in the current area, or let's say that it's not even in a projected area. The fact that they registered but are not in a projected area may incite us, so to speak, to figure out a way to get service to them, because there are ways to do that. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I could ask him.
Peter?
Another question. If they give you their address, you can find out exactly where they are, right? The same way the GPS does.
Well, that was one of the comments I was making to Dan, is the GPS, the address translation stuff you typically use is not super accurate. So it's not unique to have a situation where we have an address, we plug it in, and it looks like it doesn't have service, but it does, or vice versa, it looks like it does, but it doesn't. Because where it thinks it is not related to where the house is, right? So the house, a property matters, right? And not only that, the address databases don't actually know where the address boundaries are.
But you're talking about hundreds of feet difference.
That matters.
Right? Yeah, and that matters. Yeah. Okay.
Dave, anything else on your report?
No, I think that about covers it. Thank you very much, Chuck, for coming in this evening, as cold as it is out there. And we really appreciate the update, and we'll be looking forward to the next one. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Martha?
Hey, Chuck, if you just repeat again how people could register. Want them to register.
Right. The best way to register is to go to our website, which is www.clarityconnect.com. Really is better for us than if people call or email if you just register. And then as soon as we can serve you, we will call whoever you are, call and set up an appointment.
So assuming they have internet somewhere, they can go in.
Right, exactly.
Thanks
a lot. All right, let's go through our standing committee reports. Let's try to be crisp tonight. We're starting out with Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne is our chair.
I have nothing further than what our deputy county administrator reported.
That was crisp.
For us. I am crisp, baby.
Peter Stein chairs Health and Human Services Committee.
Ditto. How's that for crisp?
Kathy Luz Herrera had to leave. Dave's tied up. Let's go to Economic Development Committee, World Burbank Chair.
Thank you. I'll be almost as crisp. We actually had the final meeting of
the existing committee yesterday. I want to thank Carol for chairing it. And basically, we did one main agenda item, which was to take a serious look and consideration of the economic development strategy of TCAD that is going through a number of iterations. Martha Armstrong came and gave a very, very good presentation. It is all online, and if anybody would like a hard copy, I'm sure we can speak to Karen. We can get you a version of that. But this is going to be the plan for the county's main economic development group for the coming period, 5, 8, 10 years, and certainly moving forward. And our committee made a number of suggestions, a few tweaks that we caught a few mistakes, but it's going to be brought forth to the TCAD board later this month. So if you have any interest in it, I would encourage you to look at it now and contact certainly me if you'd like to discuss, but Martha Armstrong from TCAD. And finally, Mike, I'd like to issue a real warm thanks to all the people who served on the committee. That'd be Martha and Jim and Mike Sigler and Carol. It's been a good year, I hope that we can continue the momentum moving forward. So that was my
report. Thank you, Will. Any questions for Will? Government Operations, Nathan Shinagawa.
Yes, the Government Operations Committee did not meet in December. We canceled our meeting. I'm going to go straight to a resolution. I have Resolution D, establishing 2015 meeting dates. So move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed? That's unanimous. Carol?
I just have a question. So there's a note about possible tentative dates for the budget retreat and the public hearing on the budget, and I just want to request that if that's not part of the resolution, as I understand, is that correct?
Yeah, it's just a note.
That's just a note.
Okay.
And those are.
So I just want to request that a meeting maker or something be sent out so that we make sure to get the greatest number of people.
Okay, there, duly noted.
Sooner rather than later, so that those of us who might have conflicts with the dates, particular dates, could decide, or maybe have time ahead of time to see if we can change them.
Anything else, Nathan?
Nope, that is all.
Carol, then why don't you go right into your report, Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Carol Chack is the chair.
Yeah, well, most of our action items, we've had two meetings since we last met, December 17th and this afternoon. And most of what, the business we have covered with our resolutions tonight. I do want to mention the two excellent reports we had at the December 17th meeting. This county is very lucky to have Steve Penningroth, who gave us a report about the Community Science Institute monitoring program. he's got middle schoolers, in addition to adults of all ages, out there taking, with his partnerships, measuring streams and monitoring water, chemical and microbiological monitoring. So this is in addition to the lab that he runs. And we were only able to do this in this county at the cost that we do because he essentially gives his time and expertise. But these, middle schoolers, we heard, participate with synoptic sampling. I didn't know what that was, and biological monitoring and aquatic insects and all kinds of other things. Synoptic sampling, by the way, is collecting samples as near the same time as possible in more than one area of the body of water. So I learned something new. He went into a lot more detail, but he also noted that while the state has chosen to ban hydrofracking, they don't see their work ending in making sure that, that wells continue to be monitored, especially along the border areas of the state, to ensure that pollution from areas outside of New York don't contaminate water. There are landfills in New York State that are accepting the waste from fracking operations. So we New York State did a great thing, but we aren't entirely free of the negative impacts. And then we heard a report from Steve Nicholson, who we're also lucky to have, who's been reelected as chair of the EMC. And among other things, he talked about, we'll just highlight the UNA areas and the number that they've been able to work on in recent years. We now have, those are the unique natural areas, we now have a total of 41,900 acres, which is 13.7% of the total land in the county. And they are, next step will be to correspond with homeowners, provide maps and descriptions of the areas. So they have worked closely with our planning department on that as well. And he mentioned one in particular is the UNA in the area owned by Cornell University near Sapsucker Woods. So they are still working on that one. I want to mention those things. We've had great participation, in addition, by committee members this year, by the public. People have actively come to both our meeting and the Economic Development Committee meeting. I just do want to add as an addendum to Will's report that people who've been coming all year concerned about the balance, how we balance economic development and the environment, came out to provide thanks to TCAD for the ways in which they were so responsive to some of the concerns of the community, because the new economic development strategy, it was not an easy discussion within their membership, I know, and they have worked to build that in. At today's meeting, over the past number of months, and still to come in final version to the legislature, the PEAC did pass both a negative declaration of environmental significance and it passed along the latest draft of the county comprehensive plan. This is the size of it, just physically, and it was too heavy to carry, but the number of versions just that we've gone through at various stages, and the number of comments from the public, hundreds of members of the public who participated, is really striking on that. That will be available in about a week on the County Planning Department website. If you search for Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan, right now you will see the October version. That since has been through a November and a December version, and now we've tweaked it a little bit more coming out of tonight's meeting. So in about a week, that on the website, you'll be able to link to that. Right now, we only made a few minor tweaks at this point to the plan. So if you want to see the latest version now, because it's on your mind, it's part of the PEAC agenda from today's meeting. So I think that's what I've got, other than thanking. I mean, the planning department, I spent, many, many countless hours.
Questions for Carol. Dooley?
I think you omitted the EMC, which will host the statewide EMC conference this year.
Yes.
And that's a big deal.
Yes. Thank you for saying that. I don't know that I wrote down or could easily get when
it is, but it's...
I think they were still maybe picking.
Pardon?
Were they still picking a date, or they have a date?
I don't think it's firm, but it's a big deal.
Yes, and it brings a lot of visitors into town, and I hope they will encourage people to stay an extra few days in our beautiful area.
Okay. Dave, Do you have a report as Vice Chair of the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee?
No, we have not met since the last legislature meeting, as I recall. But at any rate, I don't have a report. I'm sorry.
Well, Kathy had to leave us, so I thought I'd turn to you. Charter Review Committee will meet tomorrow. That's the 7th of January at 3 p.m. here in Legislative Chambers. We'll take on two important articles, which are is for the Department of Social Services and the Department of Probation and Community Justice. Answer any questions? Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis is chair.
Thank you, Michael. We had a meeting prior to this meeting and passed a couple of resolutions that appeared on the agenda, and one will be on the next meeting. Following along with what Will said, it was good time working with the committee this year. Expanded Budget Committee went very well, and, you know, people have to come out and take part in those, and a lot of times you don't get to talk, and, you know, you just kind of listen, but it's important that you're here, and if you're not here, you watch on TV or whatever. So that all went pretty well. I appreciate all the work that all of you have done, and especially the staff, and that concludes my report.
Questions for Jim? Old Library has not met, no report. Public Safety Committee.
Oh, good evening.
Jim Dennis, Vice Chair.
As the Vice Chair, I hope Brian is not watching, but at any rate, we have two resolutions here, and at the end of that, I will give you a couple of minutes about the next meeting. Let me just move ID 5320, appropriation from the contingent fund terminal pay sheriff's office, and I would move that.
Seconded by Dooley. That's take a short form roll call. We got the revised version of that, Jim. Is that correct?
Yes.
It is okay. Revised. Ready to vote? Yes. Please call the roll.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
The next one, ID 5265, again, an appropriation from the contingent fund replacement pay reimbursement for the sheriff's office's law enforcement. And I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by?
The revised version.
Martha. Ready to vote on this one? Again, a short form roll call.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
Let me make a couple of comments about the next budget, or I'm sorry, the next public safety meeting, which is Monday at 3:30, January 12th. On the agenda are two items. One is a discussion of body cameras for the officers, and we have been talking about that. Today is not the first time we've thought about that. We've thought about that previously to tonight's meeting. The sheriff has had conversations with Joe and others, and that is clearly something, a direction that we probably want to go, but we're looking for a way. There are many questions to be answered about body cameras. Who turns them on? Who turns them off? What do you do with the information? Blah, blah, blah. All of that. That discussion will be held again on Monday. The second item, I've asked the new undersheriff and had him message the sheriff that under the sheriff's report on Monday that there be a recap of the incident at Harnbrook. I wrote down eight questions or eight comments that I heard here from the people this evening, and I will make certain that at least I will address, and other members of the committee will address the sheriff, and we will begin to hear from him and some of the people there you know, how that all came down. I think it's important after hearing what these people had to say. I heard some things here that I know not to be true already, and based on other information that I've received from people who were either there who are well aware of what happened. So I think there's a wonderful opportunity for all kinds of misperceptions, and I think the sheriff has an obligation to try to clear up as much as he can starting on Monday at the next Public Safety Committee meeting. So we will do that. The only other comment that I heard this evening about this incident and things that were said by one of the persons here that is, and I think Leslie addressed it, I don't know of any case that we've had a person show up here and talk before us that the police followed them. I mean, that would be outstandingly awful if we did that. And I'm certain that we don't do that. And that's kind of incredibly shocking comments that people make. Law enforcement people have a very difficult job. They get accused of a lot of things. Some are true. Some are just grossly untrue. And, you know, that's why we have a sheriff. That's why we have an undersheriff. We have to explain to the community and to the voters, you know, how this place runs. And I think Ken and Brian and others are, you know, they have an obligation, but I also think they have the ability to explain themselves, at least the way they saw what happened and what they had to do. Whether people agree or not, you know, I can't guess. But I think they have an obligation to explain, and I believe they will. So that concludes my report.
Mike Sigler.
I just have a quick question, Jim. This is not an exact answer. I mean, just ballpark. How long have you guys been talking about body cameras on police officers?
Oh,
6 months.
Yeah, 6 months.
I knew it was a...
Yeah.
August.
Yeah.
Right. And it's been, and the discussions have been extensive, I think.
And much of it has to do with money and the rules with body cameras. I mean, how do you make those work in an effective sort of way for law enforcement people?
Carol?
Yeah, so two things. One is I just wonder if there's more that we could do or would want to do when we communicate with the public about what's acceptable and what's not. I think there's some confusion being made between our request, the request that was made, that individual criticism of individual people who work for the county is being confused with the questions people brought to us tonight, which was you know, what policies are in place. So I don't have answers for that, but I think there was some confusion there. And then the other, I no way I want to second guess what went on in any emergency situation. We've talked here in the past about helping our departments to make sure that in emergency situations that they communicate effectively with the public wherever possible. And I don't know if there's lessons. I don't know, Jim, if you can take that back to the committee, if there's lessons that they would take back. That would seem more appropriate to me for a public part of the discussion than the details of what did or didn't happen or what decisions were made at given points in that whole emergency.
Jim, for response, then
Mark. Let me just repeat. The sheriff is an independently elected position in Tompkins County. We can talk to the sheriff. We can talk to the sheriff. We can talk to the sheriff. But the sheriff runs the department, makes the calls, not me, not you, not any of us. We have ability with a budget. But
You know, and we can certainly express ourselves in a way. And I'm not going to second guess them. I'm not going to second guess anyone who has to do that job, because it's completely out of my realm. Third grade is good for me, but not running a hostage situation. So I think, again, I'm going to say the sheriff can tell us, and that's what I'm looking forward to. And I think the community is looking forward to that.
Martha?
Yeah, just about the situation, I want to say I was out of town when I heard some of the stories and looking at Ithaca Journal online. And then Jim actually let me know that things had been resolved and, you know, that the family was safe. And that was my biggest worry, just kind of watching it unfold from a distance. And I think we don't give that. Well, I didn't hear anybody say anything about that. And I really want to give thanks to our officers and everybody who participated to make sure that happened. Again, and like everybody said tonight, I don't know what happened with the house, and we'll hear about that. But I think it was really a huge relief to hear that the mother and the kids got out of the house, out of harm's way. The issue of criticism of staff, including sheriff's deputies, I remain, I think, in a different position from Mike and maybe Gio, that I think that if the public wants to come and say that they had a bad experience with a particular member of our staff, I think that is entirely legitimate and up to them, and we hope nobody has a bad experience with our staff. We hope that if somebody has a bad experience, they find channels and they try to work it out through supervisors or the county administrator or legislators or whatever, and hope it never comes to the point where they feel they have to come to the microphone. However, I accept that it happens sometimes, that people feel they don't get whatever the satisfaction is that they're looking for. And I just don't think it's up to us to have a rule that says you can't criticize a county staff member. For one reason is that it's now been misinterpreted. And we do want to hear those comments if people have those reactions, and if there are consequences, if somebody's being libelous, and they have to take the consequences of that too. So I just think it's part of being a public body, that remains my opinion.
Peter Stein, then let's try to move on.
I was going to say something much like what Martha just said, but I want to say it slightly differently. I, too, am not completely in agreement with our policy that you can't criticize a member of our staff publicly. But that is our policy, and so I'm not going to make a big fuss about it. But I want to make it clear that policy does not mean that a person can't come in and make a complaint about how a policeman followed them home after they left the meeting. And we want to hear about that. And we certainly don't want to suppress that kind of information that we could learn from somebody that came in and was treated badly. I mean, we can't allow them to do, our policy is we can't allow them to tie that event to a particular person's name, but we certainly want to hear about.
Yes, Peter, in any department, we have proper procedures for filing complaints. Okay, can we move on? I guess that's the end of our reports. Let's go to minutes of December 16. Someone want to move those? Peter Stein, is there a second? I'll second it. Discussion? Julie Kiefer.
I'm looking at packet page 38, the first page of the minutes, at the last paragraph. This is not me speaking, but I'm reading the next to the last sentence. She presented a report from Missouri as a sample she would like to see replicated in Tompkins County. It doesn't say what the report was about, and I think the minutes should say she presented a report of detailed jail statistics.
Any objection to that? Okay, with that change, can we vote, please? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Any unfinished business? Is there a motion to adjourn tonight? By Peter Stein. Is there a second? By Leslie McBean Claiborne. Watch these judge shows and things, and they always have that pregnant pause before they announce the decision. All those in favor of adjourning, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you all. Great meeting.